Okay, it looks like we are all assembled. I see we have, because we have additional parties, we have three attorneys arguing. I just want to be sure that what I've been given is what you all have agreed to in regard to the argument. So the Village of Kikoski with Attorney Parmenter, am I saying your name correctly?
Yeah, that's correct.
Lead off, and you'll have 15 minutes, and then the Wisconsin Department of Administration with Attorney Koski, you are then the second speaker for 10 minutes. Is that correct? And then
correct.
30 minutes for Attorney Hams representing the City of Mayville. Is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay, and then we'll come back with you, Attorney Parmenter, for rebuttal, correct?
Right.
Okay, so before we begin, because all of you haven't done oral arguments before us with Zoom, I'm going to have our marshal show you how we keep track of time. And when it's time for you to begin, I will, of course, ask you to do so, and you'll also see a green start sign. When you have 5 minutes to go, you'll see a yellow 5 minute sign. And for you, Attorney Koski, who have only 10 minutes, that's going to be a quick turnaround. And then when it's time to stop, you will each see a red stop sign. I'll help you keep track of the red stop sign. Otherwise, you're pretty much on your own, and I will hold you to the stop sign unless you are answering the question of a justice, and then you can ignore the stop sign and complete your answer, okay? So with those parameters out of the way, I will call our second case of the day, City of Mayville versus Department of Administration. And Attorney Parmenter, please begin.
Thank you. Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Matt Parmenter, and I'm the attorney for the Village of Kikoski. The Village of Kikoski and the Town of Williamstown entered into a cooperative plan boundary agreement in order to save the village from having no governing body. Of particular importance for this case, that cooperative plan called for the attachment of the entirety of the town of Williamstown by the village using what's called an attachment ordinance adopted under subsection 10 of the cooperative planning statute. The plan also provided that the village would not oppose detachments that occurred within a certain portion of the village if those detachments were properly submitted and acted upon under the detachment statute. The Court of Appeals held, and this is incorrect in our opinion, that the detachment provision in the cooperative plan made Mayville a necessary party to that plan under subsection 2 of the statute. But the statute is not designed to require party status anytime a cooperative plan impacts a municipality's boundaries or recognizes that they might change. Rather, necessary party status is dependent upon the municipality's boundaries being changed under the authority of the cooperative planning statute.
How about if they were changed or maintained, counsel?
Changed or maintained, correct.
Right. What does maintain mean to you?
So the way that these boundary agreements are typically set up, they'll include areas from which attachments occur, meaning that boundaries are changed, or they lock in boundaries and expressly provide that boundaries cannot be changed. So for instance, towns typically want those provisions, right? No annexations can occur from here. We're establishing these boundaries and they're locked in. So when the statute talks in terms of maintained, and I think the Court of Appeals analysis gets into this, it means more than just the status quo. It means affirmatively maintaining those boundaries, affirmatively setting them. And so under subsection 2 of the statute, in terms of necessary party status, the statute talks about requiring that the municipality's boundaries be changed or maintained, and that the change or maintenance of those boundaries occur under this section. And the Court of Appeals opinion talked a lot about whether Mayville's boundaries would change when these detachments occurred. And I think the Court of Appeals correctly said, yes, they would. But the Court of Appeals opinion didn't look at this other element, this other phrase under this section, and what that means in terms of the statute and in terms of this plan. And so I think the important question is, what does that mean under this section? And as you work your way through the cooperative planning statute, you'll see that there's only one mechanism within that statute itself to actually accomplish any boundary change, and that is found in subsection 10 of the cooperative planning statute. And to paraphrase, it says any boundary change occurs through the adoption of an ordinance under this subsection of the statute. You'll also see in subsection 3D8 of the statute that the plan itself is required to identify who is responsible for adopting that ordinance to implement that boundary change. And there's no other boundary change mechanism within the cooperative planning statute. And so when the statute in subsection 2, when we're talking about who needs to be a party, when it talks about those whose boundaries are changed under this section, it can only mean those boundaries who are that are changed through the adoption of an attachment ordinance under the only boundary change mechanism that exists within the cooperative planning statute. You can see a distinction in the body of the plan itself. So for instance, in section 6 of the cooperative plan, that's the core boundary change provision of the plan under which the attachment of the town of Williamstown occurred. And it's very clear in that section that that boundary change is accomplished through the adoption of an attachment ordinance under subsection 10. It says that right within the text of the plan. And frankly, there's no other mechanism to do that. And you can contrast this with the detachment area provision in section 24, which is the provision that the Court of Appeals looked at in detail for its analysis, which does not rely on the adoption of an ordinance under subsection 10. And I think it's worth talking a little bit about how detachments operate in order to get a full understanding for what that provision does and doesn't do. And so a detachment is a mechanism in a separate statute that consists of three steps that are implemented by three separate parties. It's initiated by a detachment petition that's filed by a petitioner. That's step one and party one. It is then acted upon by the municipality in which the territory is currently located. In this instance, that would be the village of Kakoski. And that municipality has a choice whether to adopt an ordinance authorizing the detachment. That's party two and step two. And then the third step and the third party is where the recipient municipality or the proposed recipient municipality adopts an ordinance of its own saying, sure, we accept that territory. So three parties, three steps. The detachment area provision of the plan only concerns itself with the second part of the steps. The detachment area provision says with regard to step two, the village of Kakoski's role, if the petition is within a certain area of the village, we will fulfill our role in approving that detachment. It says nothing about step one. It says nothing about when or where or how a petitioner can file a petition. That just occurs under the detachment statute itself whenever somebody chooses to do that, if somebody chooses to do that. And it says nothing about step three, the city of Mayville's role. It imposes no restrictions or regulations or conditions upon the city of Mayville exercising its authority. It says nothing about when, where, or how Mayville can do it. Mayville retains that ultimate authority. And so as a practical matter, as these detachments work their way through, if they are within that detachment area, the petition will file the petition. Kakoski will pass it along to Mayville because it won't object. And Mayville will have complete, full, and unfettered discretion under the detachment statute itself to decide whether to adopt an ordinance under the detachment statute accomplishing that boundary change. And so the operative act within that process that accomplishes the boundary change is the city of Mayville's decision, unfettered, totally discretionary, whether to adopt that ordinance attaching that territory. And if that occurs, the boundary change occurs. If it doesn't, then it doesn't. And so this analysis from the Court of Appeals ignores that fact, that the boundary change is not occurring under this section because it's not occurring under subsection 2 is occurring under the detachment statute, which Mayville is exercising authority under that statute. Because it's not a party to the agreement, it's clear that Mayville would not be exercising authority under the agreement or under the cooperative planning statute when it engages in the adoption of that ordinance, right? And so the fact that Mayville is not a party is not a problem. It's actually evidence that the boundary changes would be occurring outside of the authority of the plan, because they can actually occur despite Mayville not even being a party to the plan. And so that's the way that the detachment area functions. It's also worth pointing out that the detachment area does not set ultimate boundaries for Mayville. Mayville makes this argument in their response brief that they can't grow beyond this area. That's incorrect. The detachment area only functions as a waiver of Kakoski's discretion to say no to detachments within a certain area, but it says nothing about its ability to say yes or no to detachments outside of that area. So they can still occur. They would just occur under the typical statutory mechanism, and Kakoski would exercise its discretion.
Also, I think, could Mayville have been a party to this cooperative agreement if they wanted to? I thought I read in, I believe it was DOA's brief, that they could
correct.
Have.
They could have. There's a process. The statute allows for any combination of municipalities to be parties, and you invoke that authority by adopting a resolution and going through those statutory mechanisms. So there was no limitation on their ability to do it. They chose not to do it. But it's true, in the record and in one of the Department of Administration's determinations, they made note that Mayville had an opportunity and didn't exercise that opportunity. I think it's also relevant or probative to point out that the detachment area provision, although we think about it or discuss it in terms of Mayville, it's not limited to Mayville. That detachment area shares a boundary with another municipality, the town of Theresa. And so the detachment area could be invoked by them as well. And so that's not to say they need to be a party. That's just to say, insofar as Mayville is asserting that it has some special status by virtue of this detachment area, it's not solely applicable to them. It's applicable to any municipality that would be contiguous to that detachment area that could act on a detachment petition, right? So it's more general in its scope and more general in its function. And the Court of Appeals, in its opinion, the entire case turned on that subsection too. They found Mayville had standing because it had to be a party, and they found that the cooperative plan was invalid because it violated Mayville's right to be a party. And so we think that opinion is incorrect for all those reasons and should be reversed. And to go further, I think there's no basis for Mayville to have standing in any other manner. And we lay this out in our brief, but the cooperative planning statute comes right out and says these boundary provisions, these cooperative plans, have the force and effect of a contract. There's case law saying that standing for boundary agreements, which are contracts, operates just like standing for any other type of contract. And what that means is standing only applies to parties and to third-party beneficiaries. Mayville is neither, and this is the Village of Slinger case and the Darbois Sanitary District case. I think you put those together and that's the result that you get. And so while Mayville may feel that it's impacted or that it's, you know, harmed geopolitically, this is a strict contract standing analysis. And that analysis focuses solely on who is a party to the agreement and who's a third party beneficiary of the agreement. Mayville's neither. And the Department of Administration made a point of this in their second review. You may have noticed, or you may notice, that this detachment area was originally called the city growth area. And the department said, no, that's not right. This is not about the city of Mayville. This is about residents who live within the detachment area who might want to receive services that only the city can provide. And so this is done for their benefit, not for the benefit of the city of Mayville. And again, as I pointed out, other adjacent municipalities could be the beneficiaries of these detachments as well. And so that's the standing analysis that I think applies. Mayville argues that the Fitchburg case is governing, and the circuit court found the same thing, although the Fitchburg case is an incorporation case, which is entirely different in that incorporations are unilateral processes in which petitioners say, we would like to incorporate this territory. And that goes to the Department of Administration, goes before what's called the Incorporation Review Board. There are standards applied, but there's no contract involved. It's a single party process. And so additional parties have the right to contest those incorporations because they aren't contracts and therefore aren't governed by contract standing analysis. So that's my response to Mayville's argument on standing. So with standing out of the way, I think the case can be resolved on standing alone. I would say in terms of the scope of the statute, which was the initial argument that Mayville made, that this was too broad or did too much for the cooperative planning statute. The statute is broad. It allows for any type of change to municipal boundaries. The Court of Appeals cites Black's Law Dictionary in terms of what change means, which is broad enough to include vacate and alter and all of these things that would envision changing eliminating the boundary between the town and the village, which is what we did here. This is also reflected in the Village of Harrison case in our brief, which notes that there are about five different boundary changes that can really be accomplished between your creation of a new municipality, eliminating municipality, combining territory, going from unincorporated to incorporated, and vice versa. There's five boundary changes, I think, that can ultimately occur, five boundary outcomes. But there's 13 different boundary statutes, right? And what the Harrison case says is the reason why there are far more statutes than there are boundary outcomes that can be achieved is because the legislature is giving you different ways to reach the same outcomes. And the cooperative planning statute is sort of the highest, the mother of all of these options, because it allows for customizable procedures to achieve outcomes that might not be achievable under some of these other statutes. And in fact, in the Harrison case, the Court of Appeals says that's specifically the point of having all of these boundary change statutes when there are many fewer outcomes to be accomplished.
Okay, thank you. Attorney Koski, are you ready to proceed?
Yes, thank you, Chief Justice. Good morning, Justices, and may it please the Court. Clay Koski appearing on behalf of the Department of Administration. The Department urges this Court to provide clarity regarding what is allowed under the cooperative planning law. Specifically, can a cooperative plan eliminate a municipal boundary? We think it can. But before the Court gets there, it has to contend with the merits issue that the Court of Appeals addressed and really raised on its own regarding whether Mayville had to be a party to the plan. We believe it did not have to be a party to the plan. And for many of the same reasons that Attorney Parmentier said, I want to focus the Court's attention on that word under in subsection 2 of the statute, under this section. So there, we believe that this plan doesn't make a change to Mayville's boundary under this section. Therefore, the Court of Appeals erred and should be reversed. This Court should affirm the approval of DOA's approval of the plan. I want to, again, emphasize the importance from DOA's perspective, unique perspective, that we're looking for clarity. We want to know what can be done under the cooperative planning law. So I want to say that for a second time. I think there are three main ways that the Court of Appeals erred, and I want to focus the Court's attention on subsections 2A through D of the statute. Those lay out the ways one can change or maintain a boundary line under a plan. The Court of Appeals focused on sub B and sub C. And we think that the problem lies in the fact that sub B and sub C do not apply because this section 24 of the cooperative plan that we're talking about, the village detachment area, it doesn't meet the specific language of subs 2B or 2C. In 2B, it requires a specified boundary line change. The village detachment area part of the plan doesn't specify any boundary line change at all. It simply says there's this 1,921-acre zone, and some future change might occur if future things occur under a different statute, the detachment statute. So that's reason number one, is there's no specified boundary line change in that part of the plan. Reason number two, again, tying to the section 2B language in the statute, must include the approximate dates by which the changes may occur. There are no approximate dates by which changes may occur in this part of the plan. This part of the plan lasts for 100 years. Those are not approximate dates. Okay, so we're talking about a 100-year horizon where these hypothetical changes might occur to Mayville's boundary. Again, contingent upon other events occurring under the detachment statute. As Attorney Parmentier pointed out, the third reason that it doesn't work is that here, to accomplish the detachment that would occur under this section of the plan, you need to have two ordinances. Under the cooperative planning law, you'll need one ordinance. It doesn't work. It does not fit the way that the cooperative planning law is set up to designate that only one of the entities that are party to the plan be the one that's enacting the ordinance. The detachment statute requires two. So I think those are three very good statutory reasons why the Court of Appeals was wrong. And if you want to focus on which part of the Court of Appeals decision I think is wrong, it's paragraphs 40 and 41, paragraph 41 being the epicenter of the wrong analysis. I don't want to spend any time on standing. I think that Attorney Parmentier addressed what needs to be. We agree with those arguments and we'll rest on our briefs. But I do want to address the merits question of whether the cooperative planning law allows for the type of change that the village and the town made to their boundary. We think it does because the word change has enough meaning to encompass eliminating a boundary. As Attorney Parmentier pointed out, change can mean altering, making different, can even mean vacating under the Black's Law Dictionary definition that the village cited in its opening brief. So we think that there is enough meaning in that key word change to approve what DOA approved here in terms of this plan. Change, in other words, change can mean entirely eliminating the boundary. We think that the statute, again, uses this key word change again and again. We think that change is the bigger concept, and it requires you to look at where we were before the plan and where we were after. And if it was different, that constitutes a change that's allowed under the statute. So I think with regard to the merits, that is what the Court of Appeals chose not to do. The reason, it chose not to do that analysis was it cut it off at the legs when it said, kind of on its own theory, that Mayville had to be a party to this plan. We think this court first has to grapple with standing. Second thing it needs to grapple with is, did Mayville need to be a party to the plan? No, it didn't. Again, there are three very good statutory reasons that tie directly to sections 2B and 2C of the statute why Mayville did not need to be a party to this plan. And we think that the court should do the analysis that the Court of Appeals did not do and should complete the analysis and review the validity of DOA's approval of the plan and conclude that the word change can mean eliminating a boundary, which is what occurred here. Those are the main points I wanted to make today. I see the court hasn't had a lot of questions thus far, but I'd be happy to answer any that you do have.
Oh, I'll ask you a question. Mayville says, look, we tried to get involved. We really did. And we weren't allowed to participate in this, even though we made attempts to do so. Could you respond to that, please?
Sure, yes, Justice Karofsky. I think that the record does reflect there are points where Mayville is indicating, just as you said, that they weren't allowed to participate. DOA doesn't view the record that way. DOA views it as when Mayville was given the opportunity to, they wouldn't participate in a way that was really going to advance the ball in reaching some kind of consensus. You know, that's not really DOA's role to comment on the dynamics between those two parties. We're simply there to make sure that the plan that's presented to us meets the statutory criteria. So I don't want to involve myself too much in those dynamics, but I don't think it's fair based on the record to say that Mayville wasn't allowed to participate. Mayville was allowed to participate. It chose not to. And the one thing that we highlighted in our brief was that if Mayville wanted to participate, the statute requires that it pass a resolution to engage in cooperative planning. It didn't do so. I'd be happy to answer other questions if the court has them. Otherwise, we ask that you reverse the decision of the Court of Appeals and affirm the DOA's approval of the cooperative plan. Thank you.
Thank you. Attorney Hams, are you ready to proceed?
Yes. May it please the court, James Hamas, city attorney for the city of Mayville. Before I address the standing issue, I'd like to just follow up on the point that Justice Karskowski raised and I think earlier Justice Dallet, and that is this participation issue. The ability to participate in a cooperative plan requires the participating municipalities to adopt a resolution declaring their intent to do so. In this case, there can be no question about it. This was an effort to consolidate the town and the village. Originally, the village said we want to dissolve, which means the village, very small area, would have gone back and become part of the town. But that wouldn't have satisfied the objectives of the town. What they wanted to do was to prevent Mayville from exercising platting authority, subdivision control authority, annexations, and so on. So they decided the only way to do this was consolidation. And the only way to consolidate, because they couldn't meet the statutory requirements, was to get the department to approve a cooperative plan that allowed consolidation. And so what they did was they adopted a resolution, which is what the first step under a 660307 plan. And they said, we, Kikoski, intend to enter into a cooperative plan with Williamstown. Williamstown intend to enter into a cooperative plan with Kikoski. And they didn't say we intend to enter into a cooperative plan with Mayville. They excluded Mayville from their resolution. And so then they sent a letter. Those resolutions were adopted, I think, on the 12th to 14th of October. Of February 2017, they immediately sent a letter to the city that said, we're going to enter into these boundaries discussions. Would you like to comment on them? And that's document number 32 at page 36 to 38. The city immediately responded and said, yes, we will do that. But that was it. They didn't want to allow Mayville to participate because they wanted Williamstown as a whole to incorporate or consolidate with Mayville. And by with Kikoski, and by including Mayville in those discussions, they would end up losing land. They knew that. So the point is that, yes, Mayville could have adopted a resolution, but it would have no effect because Mayville's resolution could not be acted on unless Kikoski and Williamstown adopted a resolution, including Mayville, in those discussions. But they wouldn't do that, and they didn't do that. As far as the standing issue is concerned, I've addressed it in a brief, but I believe the Madison-Pittsburgh case is dispositive. Almost all of the elements that the court found gave standing in that case apply here: deprivation of annexation rights, taking of platting authority, taking of subdivision control authority, and so on. The criteria, the standards by which the court determines whether standing applies doesn't matter about what the type of case it is. In other words, you may have standing if it's an incorporation, but you may not have standing under the same facts if it's a different situation. That argument just doesn't fly. And as it relates to this particular case, the statutes required notice to be given to Mayville. It allowed Mayville to participate at public hearings and submit documents. The decision that was issued, but the first decision denying the cooperative plan that was issued to Mayville included a statement that the matter could be appealed and advised appellate rights. The second statement advised Mayville of appellate rights, asking for judicial review, as did the third statement. Now, I've asked this happen to Mr. Parmentier and Township of the GLA.
Excuse me, just a minute, Counselor. We're having a problem. I'd like everyone to mute their mic, except Attorney Hammes, please.
You're muted, Chief.
Okay, am I ready? Okay. I guess the question I would ask is this. If Mayville doesn't have standing to seek judicial review of this decision, who does? Can anybody challenge the department's determination here? As a matter of fact, as was pointed out, this is a contract. And on October 4th, 2018, when the DOA approved this cooperative plan, less than 24 hours later, Kikoski and Williamstown met 8 o'clock the next morning in closed session to discuss possible issues regarding litigation with Mayville on this matter, adjourned into open session, adopted an attachment ordinance, and Williamstown, one of the parties to the contract, no longer existed. Now you have a contract with only one party left, Kikoski. Who could possibly challenge this determination or give the department clarification on what they can do, if not Mayville? They can't answer that question because clearly Mayville has standing.
So, Attorney Hammes, if Section 24 were not part of this plan, would you agree that Mayville would not have a right? Let's not talk about standing. Let's talk about a right to be a party under the 66.0307.
You're talking about the provision relating to the future growth area?
Right. If there was no, and that's something that I understand DOA made them put in, but let's say that Section 24, Village Detachment Area, which is only 3 paragraphs, comes out.
Okay, my view.
Still think Mayville has a right to be part of this?
Yes.
Why?
Because the statute requires that notice be given to various municipal entities, not only Mayville, but the school districts who are impacted by the determination. And so I think anyone who is required to be given notice of the cooperative plan and an opportunity to ask for a public hearing would have standing to ultimately appeal that determination.
I'm not talking about standing under 227.
Oh,
I'm talking about the argument that because the boundary might change, the approximate date by which would be 100 years in the future was what you're arguing, that it may change during the planning period, that Mayville under 66.0307 had to be a party to the cooperative agreement. That's what I'm asking. So if you didn't have Section 24, do you agree that you wouldn't, Mayville wouldn't have a right to be a party?
We would not have been a party to it if our boundaries were not affected.
But because you're arguing it because they may be affected in the future within the 100 years because of the designation of a detachment area that you have a right to be a party.
Well, I think the statute requires it. If you look at, first of all, Section 660307 sub 2 says no boundary of a municipality may be changed under this section unless you're a party to the cooperative plan. Subparagraph B provides that the specified boundary changes will occur within the planning period. But if you drop down, it says that the plan. Now, we also have to remember that a cooperative plan doesn't need to change boundaries. The purpose of a cooperative plan is to, you know, share snow plowing services and so on. As an incidental part of that plan, you can change cooperative boundaries because a lot of times as a result of annexations, you have disjointed boundaries and so on. So, the statute provides that in the contents of the plan, it says under sub D, it says you must identify any boundary change which may occur during the planning period. All right.
So how do you address Attorney Koski's argument that It may occur, but it's not under this section because it's...
The statute says if, well, it is under this section. This statute says if the plan that you have results in boundaries that may occur, then you must include that party as a party to the agreement. And in this case, as you pointed out, it was the Department of Administration that said in the first time when they went up there with their plan, we're not going to approve this plan unless you provide for future growth area for people that want municipal services, bearing in mind that Mayville has spent millions of dollars building infrastructure, water and sewer services for these areas in the town that ultimately would be developed as they become part of the city. So the DOA said you must provide for that. Then Kekoski and Williamstown came back and they said, well, we will do that, but only if everybody agrees that they want to join. In other words, you can't drag any other properties into the city for services that didn't want to go. Unanimous approval. DOA said, no, that isn't going to work either. And then we ended up with a third plan, which ultimately was approved. But in that plan, okay, we have changes which may occur over the next 100 years. And if the statute says that if the boundary changes may occur during that period of time, then you must include that municipality. Look at it, put it this way. Let's assume, and of course this isn't going to happen, but I mean, from an argument standpoint, let's assume that Mayville says, no, we're not going to take those people. We're not going to extend sewer services to them. All right. Well, then the purpose that the department used to require that to be included in there, and in order to meet the requirement that the compact requirement of the statute, that couldn't be accomplished. So that's why it has to go in there. And the other issue I would point out is the methodology by which they're doing this. It's kind of rather interesting. They argue, well, it's really not being done under the plan because it's being done under the detachment statute. Now, we have a contract here between Kekoski and Williamstown, who's no longer in existence. They went so far in this plan as to say there are no third-party beneficiaries to this plan, which is a rather unusual provision, isn't it? If you're a third-party beneficiary, that's a question of law. You can't put in a contract there are no third-party beneficiaries, but they did. Let's assume that Kekoski gets a petition for detachment, and they say, no, we're not going to approve it. Who's going to enforce that? Mayville's not a party to the contract. Well, how can anyone enforce the contractual obligation that Kekoski has under this cooperative plan? They can't. The only person that could, the only entity that could enforce it would be the city of Mayville, if Mayville were a party to the contract. This is one of those situations where, the department, I think, fell down. Okay. At the very first determination of the department, and I think the Court of Appeals in its decision on page 13 notes, they told Williamstown and Kekoski, you have three options here. You revise the plan to designate an area for higher level of services. But in order to do that, and that's ultimately what happened, then they should have said, and oh, by the way, you need to add Mayville as a party to this plan in order to accomplish that. They didn't do it. Then they said, you could revise the plan go the dissolution route, but that, of course, wasn't acceptable. And then they said, oh, by the way, you could develop a cooperative plan with Mayville. That's what they should have done. They should have said, no, we're not going to allow this. This doesn't make any sense. And it's not consistent with what the statute provides. But they didn't do that. And then they ultimately a third plan that was approved. So, again, I submit to the court that the Court of Appeals analysis of this case is spot on. The statute says if boundaries may change, and they may under this plan. And in fact, they're intended to change. And you know what? We know they're going to change because while this plan was going through the approval process, the city received two annexation petitions, and we adopted annexation ordinances, which the department refused to recognize. But they're all within this village growth area. So we know that this is going to occur. To say that this is speculative and it may not occur and there's no specific timeline, oftentimes in these cooperative plans, the annexation or the attachment of lands under the terms of the plan don't occur immediately. They occur over a period of time. And even the former plans that were cited by the department, none of those required immediate annexation or attachment. All of those were over a period of 20, 30 years. And then at the end of that time, what would happen is spelled out in the plan. I think if the court has reviewed the comments from the city throughout this proceeding, the city tried to work cooperatively with the department and said, you know, the area, the future growth area that the city envisioned was different than that of the Kikoski and Williamstown, but we had no ability to enforce that because we weren't no leverage because we weren't party. The second thing that the city said and wanted was, okay, but take a reasonable period of time, say 20 or 30 years, and if that growth area has not at that point become part of the city, then it automatically becomes part of the city at that time. Don't string it out for 100 years and see what happens. But none of those arguments were accepted by Kikoski or Williamstown, nor the department, and the department never really explained why. But because we were not a party to the plan, to a contract, we had no ability to come to a meaningful meeting of the minds. And I think that's the reason that the legislature required, any potential change to include those municipalities. Briefly, I want to talk about some rather interesting decisions that we have here, because the trial court found that you could not use the statute to effect a consolidation. And then because of that, didn't reach the other issues regarding whether the plan complied with the statutes. Court of Appeals addressed it on the statutory requirements and never addressed the consolidation argument either. But I submit to the court, and I've laid it out in my brief, I don't think that the use of a cooperative plan to effect a consolidation is within the scope or intent of the legislature of Section 660307. But yet that's what's occurred here. I think that if there's going to be a consolidation, that's clearly what happened here. And it was clear from day one that was what the purpose was. Then the DOA should have told Kikoski and Williamstown, you must follow the consolidation statutes. But they didn't do that, and for good reason. One of the consolidation statutes, there's two of them, 660229. They couldn't meet those requirements. I'm sure that Kikoski and Williamstown will concede that. 660330 allows consolidation without meeting the various statutory requirements. But what's interesting about that statute is it allows consolidation, but requires that the consolidating municipalities have border agreements with all of the surrounding properties. Okay. Again, why? Well, because this statute was never intended to allow consolidation. And I think the trial court's analysis is absolutely correct. One argument that the department made in its briefs filed with the court that wasn't mentioned this morning was, we've done this before type of argument, which I think carries no basis at all for approving it. Simply because they've done it before doesn't make it right. It just means that no one has ever challenged it. They argue that, well, if you affirm the Court of Appeals decision here, that could adversely impact all of these other plans that we've approved in the past. Well, that's simply not true. If you look at 660307, subparagraph 11, it says any challenge to a cooperative plan must be initiated within 60 days after it's been approved. So the decision here is not going to have an adverse effect on other plans if, in fact, they approved other plans that violated this particular statute. So, again, that's the village's or the city of Mayville's position. I'd be happy to answer any questions anyone may have with respect to our position.
The Court of Appeals remanded the matter back to DOA. Is that the resolution that you're asking us for if we agree with your argument?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what the trial court did. What we agreed to by stipulation, and then the trial court entered in order, everything was stayed at the trial court level during the pendency of this appeal. So there would be no annexations of property, no developments, no land divisions without that would otherwise have been subject to Mayville's approval. And so what the trial court directed was that it go back to DOA, remand it back, that they vacate the decision, which would then, in effect, put Kikoski and Williamstown back as separate entities. And that's what we're asking. And I would point out to you, as I'm sure you're probably aware, the whole genesis of this, that is that Kikoski doesn't have enough people to create a village board, easily resolved. All they have to do is have a referendum, dissolve the village of Kikoski, and they go back to part of the town of Williamstown.
Okay, thank you. Yeah. Are there any other questions? Okay, then I guess we are ready for your rebuttal, Attorney Parmentier.
Thank you. So there's a lot of talk about policy issues and intermunicipal politics and things like that. But the key issue for purposes of reviewing the Court of Appeals decision is still this question, this legal question, very narrow and discreet, about whether these detachment area boundary changes would be occurring under the cooperative planning statute. Attorney Hammes argued that because these changes may occur, that they're therefore occurring under the cooperative planning statute. But again, statute's really clear. All changes occurring under a cooperative plan shall be accomplished by adoption of an ordinance under subsection 10. These aren't, therefore they're not occurring under the plan or under the cooperative planning statute. On the substantive merits about the scope of the statute, Attorney Hammes in the city of Mayville argue this is a consolidation. This is a consolidation. We should have used the consolidation statute. This is not a consolidation. The consolidation is the name of a procedure, not the name of an outcome. And so a consolidation is a statutory process that occurs under two particular statutes that apply different sets of standards to accomplish that outcome. That's what a consolidation is. This was an attachment. And an attachment is a boundary change that occurs under subsection 10 of the cooperative planning statute with respect to a boundary change within the scope of that statute. And the Village of Harrison case talks about this. It says in the kind of core paragraph that we cite in our brief, it says there are numerous ways to do these boundary changes, numerous ways to take territory from unincorporated to incorporated status. And if you do it under these individual boundary change statutes, we have names for them, consolidation, incorporation, annexation. And then the court says, but there's nothing irrational about providing another mechanism to move territory from unincorporated to incorporated status using agreements between the municipalities. And they specifically do this in reference to consolidations, right? So to say that we're doing a consolidation that therefore had to be done under the consolidation statute is incorrect because that's a process and not an outcome. In addition, I would note that the consolidation statute is specifically subordinated to the cooperative planning statute. In fact, all of these boundary change statutes are. They all say subject to the boundary agreement statutes, you can do this. And so the intent of the legislature in enacting these boundary agreement statutes is we prefer cooperative boundary change mechanisms over adversarial ones. These cooperative plans are typically cooperative, and therefore we would prefer for these to occur rather than the individual boundary change processes. I would also point out that there are other statutes that actually mandate the use of boundary agreements to take in the entirety of a town. For instance, one of the consolidation statutes says that if a consolidation does not include the entire town and there's a town remnant, we don't want that, right? We don't want town remnants. They're inefficient. They're ungovernable. They can't manage themselves financially. So those have to be taken in by somebody. And it says you have to do that using a boundary agreement. And then that boundary agreement is incorporated into the boundary agreements of the other municipalities. So in those cases, you necessarily have to have boundary agreements that accomplish the elimination of a municipality, which is what the city is arguing that you can't do here. But in fact, it's mandated. And frankly, the workaround would be to leave an inefficient remnant and attach everything but for some small sliver of town territory so that you could say nominally, we didn't eliminate the town. But doing that would leave fragments that are exactly the kind of thing that the legislature is trying to avoid when it mandates the absorption of these remnants in other statutes. As far as Mayville's participation, there's a process to become involved. You adopt a resolution. If you are not being asked to adopt a resolution and you wish to take part anyway, there is a separate procedure for that in the cooperative planning statute. It's subsection 4M, and that's the mediated agreement procedure. And that's a procedure where if the two parties aren't seeing eye to eye and voluntarily adopting reciprocal resolutions with one another, you can do that. You can petition for the mediated agreement procedure. And it says a city or village may petition for mediation if it adopts an authorizing resolution and requests in writing an adjacent town to adopt one. And then there are ramifications if you do or don't do that. So that mechanism does exist. The city of Mayville just failed to avail itself of it.
Okay, thank you. Well, thank you both for a look at a statute that I don't think has been looked at except for the Court of Appeals decision. So thank you very much for bringing it to our attention. We will conclude our argument now, and thank you once again. The court will meet in closed conference at 10 minutes past 12. We are adjourned.